So, gnatimrandasya gnanjana shlakaya chakshurun meditam genetas mai shi gurave namaha. So, as I mentioned in the beginning of class, we'll be speaking about these three different topics: the rasa lila of Krishna, the appearance of Nimbarka Acharya, and also the Tulsi Shalagram Vivaha, or the Tulsi Shalagram marriage. So, the first is the rasa lila. Of course, it's very important to pronounce the words properly. There's rasa lila, and there's another word called rasa. Everyone can hear the difference? Rasa, rasa. Ah, So, rasa means a dance. Rasa means a taste. So rasa doesn't mean specifically a relationship. It means a taste of a particular relationship. So, when we talk about the five different rasas, that is the conjugal ras, the parental ras, the friendship ras, the servitude ras, or the adoration, the passive adoration ras, these are referring to the taste that one gets. The word rati means sometimes the relationship itself. So there's a taste from a particular relationship. So, as far as the rasa dance is concerned, the rasa dance was enacted when Krishna was 8 years old. Now, most eight-year-old children cannot really engage in loving exchanges with the opposite sex. Usually not. This indicates that Krishna has a transcendental body. Satchidananda Vigraha is described in the Brahma Samhita. Vishwara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Nadir Adir Govinda Saravakarana Karanam. So Krishna can do anything with his body that he wishes. Angani Yasha Sakalandri Driti Madi. He can utilize any of his senses for any purpose. They're all interchangeable. He can eat with his eyes, he can eat with his ears, he can smell with his ears, he can smell with his eyes. Not like us who have material bodies that are conditioned by the material nature. So Krishna was able to enact this rasa dance at 8 years of age. And previous to that, the devotees had, or the gopis, had performed this ceremony called the Kachya Yani Vrat. Vrat means a vow. You make a certain vow or a promise and you stick to it. So in the Indian tradition, if one wants to find a good husband, any young girls here? Not too many young girls. But if you want to find a good husband, you do this Kachya Yani Vrat. And after this vrat, you end up with a good husband. So it's a trick. So we actually have had some of our devotees who have performed this vrat, and afterwards they got a husband. Interesting, isn't it? So, this vrat is very difficult to perform. It means you just eat once a day, and you only eat unspiced khichdi. No salt, no butter, no spices. You just eat that once a day. And you take a bath in the river when it's very, very cold, and you wake up early in the morning. There's all sorts of restrictions for this particular Kachya Yani Vrat. So the gopis performed this vrat for 1 month, and it was very cold. They were bathing in the Jamuna River every day. And at the end of the vrat, they were celebrating. They had finished the vrat. Of course, they were performing that vrat to get Krishna as their husband. They went bathing in the Jamuna naked. So then when they went bathing in the Jamuna naked, Krishna, understanding that the gopis had performed this vrat, came to that spot where they were bathing and stole their clothes. And Krishna stealing their clothes was in response to their desire, their intention. Just like before you perform a fire sacrifice or have any Vedic ceremony, there's something called the sankalpa. Sankalpa means you're stating where you are, what you want to accomplish that particular day. And so the gopis had that sankalpa, that determination. And Krishna fulfilled that by stealing their clothes, and then they walked out of the river naked. In that sense, they became married to Krishna on that day. This is very important to understand. They were married to Krishna on the day that they walked out of the river. Because in the Vedic system, Vedic conception, the lady is not supposed to be without clothes in front of anyone except for her husband. Nowadays, of course, things are a little bit different. I'm sure if you go to the beach here, you'll see all sorts of things. And it's not just before the husband, it's before the general public. So Prabhupada was very strong about this point, about the chastity of ladies and ladies covering themselves in certain circumstances. I'm not going to go on about that. So the gopis were married for all intents and purposes to Krishna. And the love that they experienced for Krishna was based upon the desire to please Krishna. The lust that we have in this world, like if we see something, not only as far as the male-female interaction, but also any object of the senses, whether that object be some food, or the object may be a computer for some people. You know, some people are lusting after the latest, what do they call them, iPods or iPads or whatever. It's interesting they name all these things I, isn't it? It's not UPad or U-Tunes or something like that. I. And we know the two divisions of materialistic consciousness are I and mine. So the Apple computer company is very expert in naming their products, right? I. So when we see something that we really want, we want to enjoy it. We use the word love, yes. We say, you know, if you think of your favorite food, like, you know, I love pakoras, or I love pizza, or I love, what else do you love? Anyone else have any favorite food? What? Rasgullas. I love rasgullas. But it's not really love. Basically, I lust rasgullas. I lust pizza. I lust this. I lust that. I want to enjoy it. I want to devour it. You understand the word devour? I want to eat it, digest it. It's mine. Or just like you, in the loving exchange in this world, you have people say to each other, you're mine, and I'm yours. Forever and ever and ever. It's all perverted reflection of Radha Krishna conjugal loving affairs. But with real love, you just want to serve the object of your love. And you're willing to go to hell to give pleasure to the object of your love. And the closest thing to that is the love between a mother and her son or daughter in this world, a child. Because the mother is really willing to sacrifice everything for the child. And the only time that that's interfered with is when there's some other lusty affair going on. Let's say I've seen when a mother has a lusty affair outside of her relationship with her husband, then she becomes the enemy of the child. Chanaka Pandit says that. Chanaka Pandit says that. And I've seen some instances where the mother even kills the child, where the child is interfering with the lusty relationship with some other paramour. So the love the gopis felt for Krishna was actually love. The desire to please the senses of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so, another point is that when we talk about Krishna dancing with so many people's wives in the middle of the night, it's not that Krishna actually danced with anyone else's wife, because everyone belongs to Krishna. And so the illusion is that people think that someone is their wife or someone is their husband. That's the illusion. Because that person belongs to Krishna. It's like if you say, oh, this is my husband. But actually, that's Maya. Of course, you should stay by it too, you know, obviously. But it's Maya because it's Krishna's. Krishna's property. You don't own anything. Nirmana Mohajita Sangha Dosha Avyatma Nitya Vinivritta Kama. So one has to overcome this duality of I and mine, and understand that everyone and everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of God. Ishavashamidam Savam Yankancha Jagajam Jagat. So Krishna danced with girls that belonged to him. And the interaction that Krishna had was not a lusty physical interaction. It was the interaction between spiritual bodies or spiritual personalities interacting with each other in loving exchange. So it was a full moon night, as it is at the end of the month. The end of the month is the Purnima, or the beginning of the next month is Purnima. Today is Purnima. Purnima means full moon. And it's very, very beautiful when it's a full moon. It's considered the most romantic time. And when this time arrived, Krishna did something to attract the gopis, and he played his transcendental flute. And this flute has so much potency when Krishna plays it that the stones melt and the living entities that are animate, like the animals, they remain stunned. They become like stone. So everything changes its nature when the flute plays. Water stops running and becomes like a stone. And the stone starts running like water. So it's exactly the opposite. Things have the opposite nature from which they're usually exhibiting. So Krishna played, and the gopis, when they heard this, they dropped everything. In other words, they had their responsibilities at home. They were boiling the milk. They were taking care of their babies. They were talking to their husbands. And all of a sudden, they went into trance. And their husbands were thinking, you know, what's happening? And they just went to greet Krishna. And while they were going to greet Krishna, or before they went to greet Krishna, they wanted to get dressed to please Krishna. And they were very haphazard in their dressing. Some of them put the lower portion of the body of the clothes on the upper portion of the body, and vice versa. So, and some of them decorated one eye with the cudgel. You know what, I think most of you know what cudgel is. And some of them didn't decorate the other eye. So one eye was like black like this, and the other eye wasn't. Or they were real, they weren't so expert in putting the cudgel on them, put it up here instead of in the eye. So that some of them looked a little funny. They went to greet Krishna. Some of them were stopped. Some of them were stopped from greeting Krishna. And those gopis that were stopped from greeting Krishna, their intensity of love had to be increased because this was their time for finally purifying themselves. They were actually sadhana siddha gopis. I mean, sadhana siddha, or gopis who were actually coming to the point of pure devotional service. So there's two groups of gopis. One is the nitya siddha, and the other one is the sadhana siddha devotees. Nitya siddha means eternally liberated gopis. Of course, that means like Srimati Radharani, Lalita, Vishakha, and all those eternally liberated souls or personalities. And then you have the sadhana siddha ones, those like the sages at Dandakaranya. In the previous birth, sages at Dandakaranya wanted to associate with Lord Rama and become his wife. And Lord Rama said, I only have one wife in this birth, Ekapatni Vrata, so you'll have to take birth again. And so these are called the Munichada gopis. That means those who were previously munis. And they were stopped from seeing Krishna. And several things happened. First of all, it's described that some of them left their bodies. In fact, passed away from their bodies and joined Krishna in their spiritual bodies, whereas others left a form there with their husbands so their husbands would think that they were still there with them. In other words, they were thinking, oh, my wife is still here, but actually their wife is somewhere else. It's something like the story of Shukadeva Goswami when he was born. Shukadeva Goswami ran away from home to preach Krishna consciousness, but his father was very upset. And so Shukadeva Goswami made an imitation body, imitation Shukadeva, to go home with the father, Vyasadeva, so that the father would be satisfied. And that imitation Shukadeva stayed with Vyasadeva and later on got married. So you find in the Bhagavatam a description of the descendants of Shuka, or descendants of Vyasadeva's son. And that is the imitation Shuka. So they basically went to meet Krishna. And Krishna, when he saw them, he wanted to test them a little bit. He didn't immediately say, oh, thank you for coming, let's dance. He said, why did you come here? as if he didn't know. He said, why have you come here? Just sit down. He said, basically, why are you here in the forest in the middle of the night? There's many wild animals. You should go home. And you have so many responsibilities to perform. So go home and be with your family. And he instructed them, be chaste to your husband. This coming to the forest is not such a good thing. And if you're attached to me, that's all right. But just remember me. Don't hang around me. Go back home. Be with your husband. And if you remember me, everything will be all right. And the gopis got very upset with him at that point, saying, you are very cruel. You are our actual husband, not the person who you're married to, so-called married to. Of course, it's described that the so-called husbands of the gopis were never even able to come close to them, never able to touch them. They were just like, had to stay in a... They had to stay in a separate room, never touch their wives. I'm sure it was quite a frustrating experience for them to be married in a circumstance like that. Sometimes, this is a description, one interesting story told by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that Abhimanyu, the so-called husband of Srimati Radharani, wanted to be with Radharani, so Mother Yashoda one time gave him some jewels to bring to Srimati Radharani. And he was thinking that if he brought these jewels to Srimati Radharani, she would be very pleased with him and she would associate with him. But what happened is when Mother Yashoda gave him these jewels, she put them in a box. Krishna knew what was going to happen, and Krishna took the jewels out of the box and got into the box instead of the jewels. So you have poor Abhimanyu, who is Radharani's so-called husband, bringing this big box filled with Krishna back to his wife, and he says to his wife, please decorate yourself with what's in this box. So she, you know, she was thinking it's jewels. And then they open the box, and you know, like that thing, Jack in the Box, you ever see that? Up pop Krishna. So following her husband's instructions, she decorated herself with Krishna. So they never got a chance to go close to their wives. So Krishna then accepted their pleas, and he embraced them. And they walked along the Jamuna, talking in a very romantic fashion. The moon was full, and arms around each other. Krishna walked along the Jamuna. There was actually 16,000, over 16,000, like 16,108 principal gopis. There was just eight principal ones, but 16,108. And if you read the Goswami's literature, you'll find out there were millions of gopis. So 16,108 principal ones. And so they walked along the Jamuna. But the gopis, at that point, became very proud. I mean, it's natural that if you have Krishna by your side and Krishna has his arm around you, you're going to think, boy, I'm so fortunate. And according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of the causes of anarthas in devotional service is the byproducts of devotional service. Anartha means things that you don't want, like lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy. So byproducts means that as you perform devotional service, you get Krishna's mercy, but then you get proud of it. Or you get profit, adoration, distinction. People admire you. So the gopis were thinking like that. We're so fortunate. Krishna's by our side. Look at everybody else. You know, we have much more than anyone else. And Krishna does not appreciate pride on the part of his devotees. Krishna cuts the pride down. As described, yashaham anagrunami hariche tadanam shanai. For those who I especially favor, Krishna says, I take away everything. And so that all that they can do is chant my holy name and associate with me in this way. So we have to be very, very careful ourselves of becoming too prideful, attached, thinking ourselves the doer, thinking ourselves the proprietor, even within devotional service, or else Krishna will take things away from us. So the gopis, because they were proud, Krishna left. And the gopis were feeling great, great separation from Krishna after he had left. They were questioning the trees, the deer, the animals. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And as they were looking around, questioning, they began to imitate Krishna's various pastimes. This is called Lila Smarana. And some of the gopis took part in Krishna's pastimes, like a play act. One gopi played the part of Putana, another gopi played the part of Krishna, and one gopi played the part of Trinavarta, the wind demon, Bakasura, Vatsasura. One gopi made believe she was playing a flute, another gopi made believe she was lifting up the Govardhan hill. And as they were doing this, they saw the footprints of Krishna. But along with the footprints of Krishna, they saw another set. And that set was the footprints belonging to Srimati Radharani. So the gopis first got a little envious. Who is this fortunate girl who has the mercy of being with Krishna? But after a while, looking for Krishna, following the footsteps, they saw Srimati Radharani, who had also been left by Krishna. So Krishna did this, not that there's any fault on the part of Srimati Radharani, but to increase her hankering for him. What do they say? Absence makes the heart grow fonder. But so the most intense mood of love of Krishna is the mood of Vipralamba Seva when one's experiencing separation. There's different moods in relationship between Krishna and the gopis. There's the Purva Rag before meeting Krishna, and then there's the meeting of Krishna or being with Krishna. But even when the gopis are with Krishna, they're anticipating separation. And then there's separation. So that separation is so intense, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that one moment is like millions of years. So they kept looking. They saw Radharani. And at that point, they gave up their envy of Srimati Radharani. And the gopis, along with Srimati Radharani, started singing songs glorifying Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. And Krishna eventually came back. And Krishna sat by each and every gopi's side. And there was some discussion between Krishna and the gopis. The gopis asked Krishna, he said, there are three classes of men. Which class is the best? And they describe there's one class that only receives something from their beloved. The other class always gives something to their beloved. And the third class is neutral, doesn't receive or give. Krishna replied that the person who always gives, or the beloved or lover who always gives to the beloved, that person is the best, the person who doesn't want to receive anything. Krishna expresses after that his great gratitude towards the gopis for coming to see him. And he says, because, this is a famous verse, because you have given up everything to see me, there is no way that I can repay you. Your love itself will have to be the repayment for your love. In other words, the love of Krishna is so great, there's nothing greater than that, and that in and of itself is sufficient payment for the devotee's service for Krishna. We don't ask for anything else. So then the rasa dance started. Krishna exhibited many forms behind or besides each gopi, and each gopi thought that she was with Krishna alone. After some time, they became tired, and they placed their hands on Krishna's shoulder. There was an exchange of betel nut, and they all entered the Jamuna and swam in the Jamuna and again strolled on the bank of the Jamuna. During this description in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj, who was hearing this description from Shukadeva Goswami, becomes a little disturbed in the sense that he's thinking that this is a very bad example. Because as Krishna says in the Gita, yad yad acharati shrestas tatadi vetaro janaha, that a great person sets an example and other people follow. So Shukadeva Goswami is asked by Maharaj Parikshit that why is the Lord giving this example? He says, uses the word jagupshitam. He says this is a horrible example. People are going to follow this. And we do see sometimes people follow, in India especially, try to follow Krishna's example of dancing with the gopis, there was that Vivekshena, who was condemned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he called himself Vishnu, and his associates were Brahma and Shiva, and he was dancing with girls in the middle of the night in the name of the Rasa dance. Eventually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur put him in prison, and he committed suicide. So, Parikshit Maharaj is very much concerned with this. And so Shukadeva Goswami replies that actually one should not imitate Krishna in this most intimate loving exchange unless he can lift Govardhan Hill with the pinky of his left hand, or unless he can do what Lord Shiva did, which is drinking an ocean of poison without having any ill effect. So this discussion goes on between Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. Finally, at the end of this description of the rasa dance, Krishna finally tells the devotees to go home, and the night in which they were dancing lasted for a whole night of Lord Brahma. A whole night of Lord Brahma is a thousand ages taken together. A thousand ages means Divya Yugas. A Divya Yuga is 4,300,000 years times a thousand, Sahasra Yuga Paryantam. That's the duration of Brahma's night. And because they were experiencing so much happiness in giving Krishna pleasure during that night appeared to pass like an instant. So that is spiritual happiness, spiritual pleasure. It goes very, very quickly. Whereas spiritual pain, the separation from Krishna, yugayitam nimishena chakshusha pravashayitam, goes very, very slowly. A moment is like, Prabhupada translates that as 12 years or more, but the literal Sanskrit translation is a moment is like yuga, like millions and millions of years, a moment separation from Krishna. So that's the description of the rasa dance. I don't know how much time we have, and actually my schedule is tight too. So now we'll talk about Nimbarka. Nimbarkacharya is called Nimbarkacharya. I'm not going to talk about his family history, but he's called Nimbarkacharya because once upon a time, Lord Brahma came to see his family when he was very young, and the sun was about to set, and Lord Brahma came in the guise of a sannyasi to visit Nimbarka's family. So they wanted to give Lord Brahma some prasadam, but there was no way to go out because everything was dark and they didn't have any electric lights at that particular time. So what Nimbarka did is he took the Lord's Sudarshan Chakra and put it in a tree, and that lit up everything. Now, because Arka means like light or the sunlight, and then Nim tree, so he put it in a Nim tree, and that lit up everything, and from that day forward, he became known as Nimbarkacharya. And so sometimes Nimbarkacharya is considered to be an incarnation of Lord Vishnu's Sudarshan Chakra. And Nimbarkacharya is described here as the embodiment of mercy, piety, love, and kindness. And the chief kshetras are holy places for the followers of Nimbarkacharya are Vrindavan, Nandagram, Barshana, Govardhan, and another place called Nimgram. The followers of Nimbarkacharya, who you'll meet in Braj, consider it their foremost duty to do a parikrama of the whole Braj Mandal. And Nimbarkacharya taught the Dvaita Advaita philosophy, and I don't have time to get into that particular philosophy. And he wrote books on the Bhagavad Gita, commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, the Karma Kanda, the Hasya Shodasi, and explanation of the Gopal Mantra and the Gayatri Mantra. So he's a very, very important person, the head of one of the sampradayas. That's Nimbarkacharya. Finally, we'll talk about the Tulsi Shalagram Vivaha, which occurred today. I don't know if you do a ceremony for that here, do you? No, you don't. Most of the temples where there's a lot of Indian members, we do that. Like in Suva in Fiji, we have an elaborate procession that goes basically down the street with Tulsi Devi. There's Tulsi Devi, someone has a Tulsi Devi on his head, and that Tulsi Devi is brought to the deity of Lord Vishnu, and we dress up Tulsi Devi in a nice sari and perform a whole marriage ceremony. It goes on for, I think, for an hour or two. You've seen that? Yeah, seen that. In many countries where there's a lot of Indian people, we do that ceremony. So here's the story. Once upon a time, it's a very interesting story and quite elaborate. There were two Vaishnavas named Dharmadvaja and Gusadvaja, and they were worshipping Lakshmi, and they performed many, many austerities. And this Dharmadvaja was married to a lady named Madhavi, and Madhavi gave birth to an expansion of Lakshmi after 100 celestial years. In other words, the child was in the womb for 100 years, and that was Tulsi, Tulsi Devi, who we know. And she had a lotus flower on her foot. Her face had a beautiful mood. The eyes were like lotus petals. The limbs were like bimba. The palms of her hands and the palms of her feet were red. And the navel was deep. And there were three folds. And she had a halo, white complexion, and a complexion like a champaka flower, which is very, very white. So this Tulsi was previously an associate of Srimati Radharani, and I'll tell the story about that in a second. So the Tulsi went to Bhadarika Ashram, to perform austerities to get Krishna as her husband. So she performed austerities for 100,000 years. For 20,000 years, she ate fruits and water. 30,000, she ate dry leaves after that. 40,000, she just breathed. In other words, for 40,000 years, all she did was breathe. For 10,000 years, she ate nothing and didn't breathe at all and stood on one leg, and Brahma finally came. And Brahma came, and she asked for a boon. She explained in the past that she was a gopi, a partial expansion of Radha, and what happened was that Krishna was intimate with her, and Radharani got very upset. And Krishna said, and she cursed, Radharani cursed her, and Krishna said, you should take birth in India and marry Narayan, or associate with Narayan. Brahma replied, you will marry this personality named Sankachuda, who was Sudam in Goloka. And the Sudam was basically cursed by Radharani. He was also attracted to you, but he was cursed by Radharani because he one time chastised Radharani, because Radharani got angry with Krishna, Sudam got angry with Radharani, and Radharani cursed him, you were acting like a demon, you should come down to the material world and be a demon. He apologized to Radharani. Radharani felt remorseful, and Radharani said, you only have to stay down for one instant, because one instant in the spiritual time is like a very long time in this material world. There's a relative times. So this Sankachuda was a demon, was what we call Jati Smarana. He could remember his past birth, and Tulsi could also remember his past birth. And Lord Brahma explained that this Sankachuda performed austerities to get you as his wife, and later on, you will associate with Narayan, and you will curse him, and you will become also cursed and become the Tulsi plant. So Tulsi at that point asked Lord Brahma to become free of the fear of Radharani, because she was very much afraid because she was cursed by Radharani. And Lord Brahma initiated her into a 16-letter Radha mantra. In this way, he said, you become very dear to Srimati Radharani, and she will approve of your relationship with Krishna. So Tulsi worshipped Radharani for 12 years, and then Kamadev, this is a spiritual pastime, Kamadev means Cupid, affected her, and she began to see Sankachuda in her dreams. And so Sankachuda, we don't have time to tell about the history of Sankachuda in terms of how he was born, but he was born from a demon named Damba. So Sankachuda previously had performed austerities to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma appeared to him and said, you will be invincible to the demigods, and you will marry Tulsi. And Lord Brahma gave him an amulet. That means something you put around your wrist. This amulet was called Sarva Mangalaya. Mangala Maya, sorry. And he said, well, as long as you wear this amulet, nobody can defeat you in battle. So he went to Badrik Ashram to marry Tulsi, and Tulsi saw him, and Tulsi tested him first. She said, do you understand the nature of women? She said, I'm not going to be faithful to you. And he said, this is only women in passion and ignorance. And so Tulsi was very pleased. Lord Brahma appeared and performed the Gandharva rite. Gandharva rite is the way that people get married. There's different types of vivaha ceremonies. One ceremony is the Gandharva, where people, the man and the woman, they just agree on getting married, and they just exchange garlands. Very, very quick ceremony. Another ceremony is the Rakshasa vivaha, where the man kidnaps the wife. This is a bona fide method, and some of you may choose to employ that sometimes. It's very romantic. It's quite nice, you know. Krishna did that with Rukmini. Arjuna did that with Subhadra. So it's bona fide. So I want to see members of ISKCON do that in the future. And it saves a lot of money on the marriage ceremony, too. Because in the Indian culture, you have this like 3 or 4 day marriage ceremony, isn't it? And then you have to go to the boy's house and then the girl's house. And the whole thing costs like tens of thousands of dollars. Isn't it? Very expensive. Very, very expensive. I mean, I have friends who spent like $50,000 on their daughter's marriage. And there was one gentleman in India, a very rich man, Mittal, who spent like $20 million on his daughter's marriage. So better to have the Rakshasa marriage. That's my humble suggestion. Put that in writing? No. You cannot repeat what I said. So they have this Gandharva marriage where you just like exchange garlands. Also, Shantanu and Ganga Devi in the Mahabharata, it's described, had this sort of marriage. They exchanged garlands and they were married. And so Tulsi and Shankarchuda got married. And they enjoyed for many years, for 4,300,000 years, they enjoyed as a married couple. And during that time, Shankarchuda got control of the whole universe. And so the demigods, they went to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma went to Shiva. Then they went to Vaikuntha and Lord Narayan, and they complained. And Lord Narayan explained this whole story that I mentioned before, that Shankarchuda was Sudam, and he was cursed by Radha. And Krishna had flirted with his Viraja, who later on was cursed by Radha also. So he explained the history. So Lord Narayan gave a trident to Lord Shiva to kill Shankarchuda. But he explains that you won't be able to kill him unless this amulet is taken away and Tulsi's chastity is violated. So he says, I'm going to take care of taking away the amulet and violating Tulsi's chastity. I will take the form of a Brahmin and ask for this amulet. And in this way, Shankarchuda, who's taken a vow to give everything to the Brahmanas, will give me the amulet, and then I will take the form of Shankarchuda and violate Tulsi's chastity. So then Lord Shiva gets ready to attack Shankarchuda. Shankarchuda accepts the challenge. There's Lord Shiva, Kartikeya, the Vasus, the Adityas, Indra, Agni, and Vajrakali attacking Shankarchuda. And Shankarchuda tells Tulsi about this battle and tells her in the future, don't worry, even if I die, we'll be back with Radha and Krishna in the spiritual world. So they prepare for war, and there's 300,000 forces on the side of Shankarchuda. Shankarchuda is very respectful to Lord Shiva, and he fights with Lord Shiva and he fights with Vajrakali, but they are both stopped because Krishna at that time had not yet violated Tulsi's chastity. So they're told by a heavenly voice to stop. So what then what happens is that Krishna takes the form of Shankarchuda, and he goes to Tulsi's house And he says, I've won the battle. I've defeated all the demigods. And Tulsi has a relationship with Krishna, who is actually Shankacharya, who is actually, you know, with Krishna, who she thinks is Shankacharya. And so her chastity is violated. And then Krishna, in the form of a Brahmin, takes away the amulet, or asks for the amulet from Shankacharya. And so Shankacharya is that time vulnerable. He can be killed. So Lord Shiva then fires a trident by the name of Vijaya, which is 100 suns in brightness, 14,000 cubits long. A cubit is about from here to here. So 14,000 cubits long and 100 cubits wide. And Shankacharya sees it coming, and he goes into yoga posture, he meditates on Krishna's feet, and he is killed. And his bones are tossed into the sea. Those bones become conch shells. And those conch shells are actually what we blow when we have and what we offer to Krishna. So this, therefore, the conch shells are sacred. That's the source of conch shells. And it's described that when we put holy water in a conch shell, that holy water becomes like a sacred river. And that can be offered to everyone except for Lord Shiva. And every time a conch is blown, it indicates Lakshmi is there. Except when low-class people blow a conch shell, Lakshmi is annoyed and go elsewhere. So in other words, if you have someone who is not following the regulated principles, if they blow a conch shell, you lose money. And if you blow a conch shell by bona fide devotee, then Lakshmi appears. It's nice, isn't it? So that's why we blow conch shells during different ceremonies, because it invokes auspiciousness. So the conch also indicates that Lord Krishna and Lakshmi are there. So then Sudam regained his original form with jewels, flute, chariot, and the coward boys, and they flew all back to Goloka Vrindavan. And Radha and Krishna were very happy to see Sudam back in Goloka Vrindavan, and they took him on their laps. But Tulsi was not happy, because she saw that she was cheated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because she could discover that this person who she was having a relationship was different than Shankacharya. And she said to him, who are you? And then Lord Vishnu assumed his form. And Tulsi said, I'm going to curse you. You are like a stone because your heart is like a stone. You are merciless. You violated my chastity. And you have killed my husband. Therefore, I curse you to become a stone. Your devotee committed no offense, and yet, for the sake of others, you killed him. Why? And then Lord Narayan explains all these things. And he says, I will become a stone in the Gandaki River. And your body will become this Gandaki River. In other words, the Gandaki River, which is in Nepal right now, is actually an expansion of the transcendental body of Tulsi. And the stones, the Shalagram Shivas that are found there, are directly Narayan. And he said, your hairs, the hairs of your body will be transformed into holy trees. And the trees will be born of you. They will be known as Tulsi trees. He says, all the residents, this is from the Padma Purana, all the residents of the three worlds will worship you, will worship me, referring to Narayan, with the leaves and flowers of this tree. Thus you, Tulsi, will reign as the best among trees and flowers. And here's some of the benedictions. Very interesting. That one gets from worshiping Tulsi. It says, Lord Hari will not be pleased with the gift of 1,000 jars of honey as with one Tulsi leaf. Offering one leaf as a gift will bring the same reward obtained by offering millions of cows. If one offers Tulsi leaves during the month of Kartik, he gets the same results as all the things we just previously mentioned. If at the time of death one drinks or gets the Tulsi leaf in water, one will be freed from all of his sins and proceed to Vaikuntha. Whoever drinks the Tulsi leaf water daily will be redeemed in his lifetime and receive the benefit of a dip in the Ganges. Whoever plucks the Tulsi leaf, keeps it in his person, and then leaves his body in a holy place will go to Vishnu Loka. Anyone who worships me with this leaf daily will reap the blessings of 100,000 horse sacrifices. Anyone who leaves his body holding a Tulsi leaf in his hand will be saved from all sins. Anyone who wears a necklace composed of tulsi wood will surely at every step get the reward of a horse sacrifice. So there's many, many benedictions mentioned here. It's all from the Padma Purana. And there's also an elaborate description of the different types of Shalagram Shilas. The Shalagram Shilas are, let's say, shaped or imprinted by the different worms that are there in the Gandaki River. And depending upon their shape or form, they're incarnations of different aspects or different expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. Finally, this is one final thing, a description of Tulsi. Of all flowers, Tulsi is the best. She is the worshipable and beautiful and burns up the fuels of sin like the flames of the fire. Of all the goddesses, she is the most sacred. Because no one can compare to her, she is called Tulsi. I worship this goddess who is entreated by all. She is placed in the heads of all, desired by all, and makes this universe holy. She bestows liberation from this world and devotion to Lord Hari. I worship her. After this meditation and worship, the wise should read her praises and bow down to her. So this is the description of the Tulsi Shalagram Vibha. So any questions about any of the points I made in class? Yes.
Maharaj,
even
the Sunday feast.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a reflection of love. Just like the reflection that we see. Of course, the 15th chapter of the Gita describes this world is like a reflection of the banyan tree in the river. And the banyan tree, of course, appears to have its roots upwards and branches down. So, and there is love in this world. It's, as you mentioned, it's not pure love. Just like the love a mother has... The love a mother has for a child, I probably said that's the closest thing to pure love. And it is very, 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 very close to pure love because the mother is willing to die. I mean, a good mother is willing to die for the sake of the child. And it's important to distinguish that between lust. I mean, lust means to enjoy the object, the other object, or the person as an object rather than a subject. Anyway, one can. There are degrees. Yes, there are degrees. It's not that every relationship in this world is simply based on lust. There are degrees of love and lust and dedication and chastity and loyalty, and it's not an all or nothing thing. Yeah. In the mouth. Vishnu Loki. Yeah. Yeah, they've been rendering service to Krishna throughout their lives. I mean, giving milk, or if it's a bull. I don't know if you use bulls here for... Do you use bulls here for plowing the land or anything?
Not
at the moment. But at least the bulls are here on Krishna's land, and yes, they go back and die. Or at least they get a chance to serve Lord Chaitanya in the next life in the Sankirtan movement, which is the same thing as going back to Godhead. There's actually no difference, yeah.
I was just
going to
mention this. You know that interview it's on the DVD when Prabhupada is speaking at Garland, there's all those university scholars, and he's talking about love, and he's saying, he says something like, if you love Krishna, then you can love everyone else around you.
Right.
You can love your family, your community members, and he says you can even love an ant.
That's a good point. And of course, Prabhupada was indirectly making reference to this verse in the Isopanishad. What is it? Yastu sarvani bhutani atmane vana pashati sarva bhutesha chatmanam tatona vigigupshate. Which basically indicates that if one loves Krishna, one loves everyone. So the more we become Krishna conscious, the more we can actually have love for our family members too. So it's not that we're advocating don't like anybody else. And just love Krishna, because Krishna is the root of the tree. If you water the root, typical example given, then there'll automatically be love for every other living entity. In fact, if one hates anyone, let's take the opposite side of the equation. If one hates anyone, it's an indication that he's not Krishna conscious. If you have any animosity towards anyone, or you want to exploit someone, that's an indication that you're not Krishna conscious. And a good indication of your progress in Krishna consciousness is that you don't consider anyone to be your enemy, and you love all living entities. And so, yes, the devotees should love their families, devotees should love their children, they should love their husband, their wife, they should love the cows. But, in other words, but you have to distinguish between your wife and the cows, too. Like, if your wife says, "Do you love me?" and you say, "Well, I love the cows, too, and I love you," you're going to be in trouble that day. It's going to be an absolute disaster. But so obviously we have different relationships in this world, but the love has to be there, yes. A devotee can actually have that love. Whereas someone who is not Krishna conscious, because they're controlled by the modes of nature, let's say someone who is not at all Krishna conscious, zero Krishna consciousness, the description given is Harava Bhaktasya Kato Mahadguna, that the modes of nature are controlling that person. So sometimes they may exhibit some affection towards someone, but when a different mode takes over their consciousness, they can be violent towards that person. They can switch from one second to another. And of course, we've seen that. And sometimes in intimate relationships, there'll be someone saying, "I love you, I love you, I love you," and then the next second, there'll be physical violence or abuse in that relationship. And that's the modes of nature. Whereas a devotee doesn't switch like that. A devotee is always, a real devotee is always stable, maintains the relationship of love continually. There's nothing that interferes with that relationship. That's the test of love is that it's continuous without any break. And it never stops. That's real love. Not that you know, I love you, I love you, I love you, and you do something I don't like, I hate your guts. Did you ever hear that in a relationship? I mean, it happens sometimes, you know. Isn't it? "Oh, you're like the moon to me. And, you know, I hate you." So that's not love. When it can go from one thing to another, it is definitely not love. Of course, anger can be a manifestation of loving relationships, too. But not violent anger, not hateful anger. But even in the relationship between Radha and Krishna, you find Radharani get angry with Krishna sometimes. When Krishna wants her to get angry because he enjoys that. I was just reading in Vidagdha Madhava, where, yes, this is an interesting story, where Krishna was with Radharani and he deliberately mentions Chandravali's name. You know, Chandravali is her so-called competitors. So Krishna is with Radharani and he says, "Oh, your face is like Chandra..." Oh, sorry. You know, he makes a mistake, a slip in words. He said, "I didn't mean that. I said your face is like moons." And he said, "No, you said that other word." But Krishna deliberately does that. And he also asks Vrinda. Vrinda, of course, is in charge of Vrindavan. In this particular story, the Vidagdha Madhava, he asked Vrinda to have her pet monkey, his name is Kakati, come and say to Radharani that Krishna was associated with Chandravali. So he asked Vrinda to arrange for Radharani to get angry. So he enjoys this this anger of Radharani. So in order to pacify her, which is part of his enjoyment, he takes the form of a girl, and so he can get close to Radharani, and then everything gets passed by. This is the whole story. It's a very long story involving the Gaurikund story in Vrindavan around Govardhan. So in other words, sometimes anger can be part of loving exchanges, but not the anger where you hate the other person. Hate is never part of a loving exchange. But there can be flavor, just like we find the seven indirect rasas. There's the five direct rasas. I think some of you may know about this, you know, like conjugal relationship, parental relationship, friendship, servitude, and finally the passive adoration. There's the five, and they're flavored by other rasas, which are called the indirect rasas, like adbhuta, like wonderment, or laughter, hasya, or even flavored by anger sometimes, ghastliness or anger. So this flavors relationships. It doesn't indicate a lack of love. It just indicates a different flavor of a loving relationship. Of course, that's a little technical. So any other questions or comments? Yes, you have a question.
No, I was just saying that we often say, oh, I hate you. And I was thinking about this hate that we may feel towards others.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, do we really hate other people, or is it the circumstances surrounding them, things that may be displeasing to us, that is what we hate, not that we actually hate someone?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we can't hate anybody because we don't know them. You can only hate or love someone that you know. So in the material world, we don't know anybody. All we see is the body. So we're hating... We're angry because jayato vishak pum sang sangosteshu pajayate sangat sanjayate kama krodha pajayate, because we're frustrated, our lust is frustrated. So actually we're feeling angry, not so much at them, but at the circumstance. Yeah, that's a good
point.
Often
a children say this to their parents, don't they? One minute they're very loving, and the next thing they'll say, I hate you.
Yeah, because their senses are not satisfied.
It's a frustration, isn't it? Not that they...
Well, of course, they're focused on their parents because they think their parents are meant to be the order suppliers for them. It's not that they actually hate the parents, but the focus of hate is on the parents. I mean, you can get a little technical like that. But you can't, in this material, if you're in Maya, you can't really hate anybody because you don't see them. Just like I think like that when, in my position, you know, people criticize all the time. You know, I can go on the internet, I can read all the criticism of myself. So I'm thinking that nobody really knows me, so how can they criticize me? I mean, they don't know who I am. They don't know. It's only Krishna, my spiritual master, and other great devotees who may know me. I'm not this body. So they really can't criticize me, or they can't hate me because they don't know me. That's one way of looking at it. So any other questions or comments? Yeah.
I'm actually discussing pride earlier, and I think in the context of the
confidence.
So I wanted to ask you if you could give me some advice to develop that confidence without it turning into pride.
Well, confidence in Krishna and confidence in the instructions given by Krishna's representative. For example, Prabhupada said the success potency is contained within the order of the spiritual master. So that's the confidence. You know, I'm going to be successful because he or she has given me this order. Krishna has given me this order. So this order will be fulfilled. And that way, I'll give you a practical example of that. When Prabhupada gave us the order, I was in Los Angeles many years ago, to produce 17 books in 2 months, which is actually impossible. And Prabhupada said, impossible is not a word in a devotee's dictionary. When Prabhupada gave that instruction, we had confidence in that instruction that it could be fulfilled. But we weren't prideful thinking that it's due to my ability. It's due to the instruction, the empowerment that I'm able to do this, not due to myself or my own ability or my own intelligence. Does that make sense? Okay, I think we're going to have to end because we have a tight schedule today. Thank you very much. All glories to His divine grace, to the Prabhupada, Ki Jai.